Dear all, my name is Jaana Kettunen. It is my great pleasure to welcome you all on this online webcast from Finland, University of Jyväskylä, on 19th of February 2014. This webcast is jointly organized by the University of Jyväskylä, Finnish Institute for Educational Research, EIAVG, International Association for Educational Vocational Guidance, ELGPN, European Lifelong Guidance Policy Network, and Florida State University. Our special guest today is Professor James Sampson from Florida State University. He works as an Associate Dean for Faculty Development and Administration, College of Education at Florida State University. He's globally well known from his work on the use of information and communication technology in guidance, design of guidance services, and evaluating the impact of guidance services. And today he will be talking about using information and communication technology in delivering career intervention. Jim, you are very warmly welcome. Floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Let me begin by expressing my gratitude to Raimo and to Jaana for inviting me to speak today and to participate in this webcast. We have some exciting things to share today, I think, with what's happening in ICT and career interventions. But it's important for me to also thank my co-author of the paper that this presentation is based upon, who's Deborah Osborne, my faculty colleague at Florida State University. The purpose of the presentation today is to really give an overview of current developments in the use of ICT in career interventions, and also to show a little bit about how things have changed over time and perhaps give an indication of where we might be going in the future. I'm going to be covering a lot of topics today, so this is really a strong overview of what's happening in the field. So I won't be covering any one particular topic in depth, but instead trying to give a good sense of what's happening in the field. We're going to start by defining what I mean by career intervention, a little bit about what I mean by information and communication technology, discussing a little bit of the benefits and limitations of ICT, and then moving on to the roles of ICT and the roles of the practitioner in delivering career interventions. We'll also talk a little bit about how practitioners' scope of practice influences their use of ICT in career interventions. From there, from those general topics, we'll switch to some more specific examples of ICT in career interventions. We're going to look first at computer-assisted career guidance systems, and then move on to computer-assisted assessment, and then computer-assisted career information. We'll look spend a little time looking at some special populations and the ICT that is relevant for them, talk some about distance career counseling, and then have a look at some of the newer innovations, including social media, mobile technology apps, and games, and how those might be used. We'll mention virtual career centers, and then talking about how to integrate all this technology into a more seamless service delivery process and the power that is possible there. And end with a little discussion of ethical issues and professional standards, and hopefully have time for some questions at the end. So what's a career intervention? We use lots of terminology. We talk about career counseling, career guidance, career services, career resources. But in specific today, we're having, I think, a very broad focus and looking at career interventions. And the purpose of a career intervention, as you can see here on the PowerPoint screen, is to promote career growth and development as well as managing one's career across the lifespan. And this idea of managing the career across the lifespan has been an important aspect of ELGPN work in trying to look at lifelong learning and lifelong career development. These career interventions range greatly from very intensive interventions where the practitioner provides a lot of interaction with the individual being served. That may occur over many sessions, all the way to using self-help resources where a practitioner might not really be involved other than perhaps helping to create some of the self-help resources themselves. If we look at information and communication technology, essentially what we're talking about is integrating the data processing capability of computers with the data transmission capacity of digital networks. Originally, we talked back in the 70s and 80s about IT, information technology, and the role that that would play. But it was when we added the communication element, which is the C in the ICT, that the real power of this technology to transform and improve career interventions really, really took place. There's a wide range of ICT applications, ranging from simple information files and telephone support for individuals who are receiving services and career interventions, to very sophisticated software, computer-assisted career guidance systems, distance counseling, and social media sites that facilitate interaction among individuals and practitioners. So we start from the very simple and we move to the much more complex. At the beginning, the original use of IT was really concerned with automating existing career interventions and supporting existing services. The aim was just to do a better job of what we were already doing, as opposed to trying to move us forward into new areas. The internet, the C part of the information and communication technology, has really had a major impact in changing the way that we think about the use of this technology. We've gone from a resource to facilitate communication and to disseminate information to more the collaborative construction of knowledge using social media and mobile devices. We've gone from disseminating information created by experts to now including substantial content derived from users. This is a key point that I want to emphasize that I believe is going to have a major impact in the way that we deliver career interventions. If you think about using information and communication technology in your own life, perhaps you're buying something on the internet, where before you might look at an internet website to see what products were available, now there's more of a two-step process many of us use. We'll look at the manufacturer's website for the product, but then we'll look at comments that other people have offered saying how good the product was, how easy it was to install, how good the customer service was in case there was a problem. And so we've really switched the locus of control away from the exclusively on the expert or the provider to more looking at the experience of the user. And if we harness this power in guidance, well, I think we really can transform the way that we provide these the guidance services that that we currently have. And we'll say a little bit more about this in the, a little bit later with some data that we have. So it's this shift in locus of control that's really important. If we look at the history of guidance, of course, we've seen this shift in locus of control before. Originally, in a guidance performed 100 years ago, the guidance practitioner was very much the expert offering advice. A person would come needing assistance, and they would offer advice, and that was the main focus of the interaction. And then somewhere mid-20th century, the evolution began where the role of the guidance practitioner became less of the expert about what a person should do, but the expertise was really more about the nature of the guidance process, how to assist someone in making these choices. So now we're evolving to saying that not only is the practitioner helping to guide the process, but the practitioner is also not the only source of information about that process, because it's a collaborative process amongst many people trying to make career choices. A good example would be people who are unemployed, who might be in a job club, who were sharing information about job leads and strategies for being successful in job interviews. And that's the individual seeking employment themselves, in addition to the guidance practitioner, who might also have expertise in this this area. And probably the most exciting part of this new use of technology is the fact that we have opportunities to reach out to individuals that we really weren't serving effectively before. Initially in career guidance, we really only served the people who came to us, who had the willingness to be proactive and come and seek assistance. Or we were working in schools and we had a captive audience of students and we had a group intervention and they simply sat there and listened to what we had to say. But by looking at some of the new options for social media, we have now the option of entering individuals' life in ways that we couldn't before, and also reaching people who are not likely to come and seek assistance from us. Especially young people who are very plugged in, tuned in to this electronic world of ours, but not necessarily connecting with adults as well, especially young people living in poverty, young people who are, face social exclusion, who have essentially not been always well served by career interventions. We now have a way to reach them in ways that we didn't really have before, and I think that's one of the most exciting things about the use of this technology. Well, I'd like to contrast now benefits and limitations of ICT. Obviously, the first and foremost benefit is incredible increased access to information. This increased access to information has in many ways transformed healthcare in many countries around the world. People who now go to see a physician with a health problem may already have done their own diagnosis off of getting information off the internet, because there is so much health information available on the internet. And the same thing, of course, is true of career information as well. There is an abundance of information. One person gave the analogy, it's a little bit like drinking water from a large fire hose. A massive amount of information is available to us. Another part is the increased access to practitioners. We can reach out to people in ways that we really couldn't. And we can look at this in terms of, in some cases, that this access, using IT to improve access, is a necessity, and in other cases, it's a convenience. In terms of a necessity, examples would be people with physical disabilities, who the simple act of getting up in the morning, getting dressed, getting to public transportation or getting into a car, and making their way to a practitioner, a career center, a counselor, is a very difficult act. And to be able to reach out to that person in their home, to be able to serve them at a distance where they don't face the barriers that make it difficult for them to receive help, that greatly increases a person with a disability's access to services. Another thing is that a worldwide phenomena that we're seeing is that people are continuing to move from rural areas into cities. So we're seeing this population shift from the countryside, less farming, more people seeking jobs in the city. The problem is, what happens to the people that still do live in rural areas? In many cases, as towns shrink, we have less services available because there's less people living in the area. It means that people living in these rural locations, remote locations, have problems accessing services. Well, luckily, with the information and communication technology, distance is not a problem. Distance does not become a barrier because we can reach out and assist those individuals who really need that help. For others, it's simply a matter of convenience. Many people work during the day, and a practitioner is also working during the day. And so a barrier sometimes people say is, well, I'd like to go get help, but I'm working all day, and so I can't get an appointment to get help, or I have to take time off from work in order to go get career assistance. And that means that people actually then have less access. But if we have people, practitioners working at a distance on telephones, for example, who they're available in the evening, then you can work during the day, go home at night, and then you can still access that assistance at a time that's really convenient for you. And some people just like the convenience of being able to schedule things on their own time. We've had a supply model of guidance. The focus was really on the career service practitioner, the counselor, when they were available to be able to provide assistance. When they had an appointment, someone could get assistance. But the focus was on the supply of the service as opposed to the demand. Well, if we have practitioners available on a bank of telephones, similar to the way we did with the Learn Direct system, which was a very successful system in the UK for many years, then people could just, at a time that's convenient and right for them, they can call and get the assistant right at the point in time where it's really needed. Manufacturing talks about getting inventory on demand and real time when the inventory is needed specifically for the manufacturing process. And so how do I get the right part at the right time to put together the car or whatever that I'm manufacturing? Why can't guidance work in a similar way, to where when the individual, it's the right time for them, when they're available, when they're prepared, when they've been thinking, they can call and access someone. That convenience then increases the chances, I think, of success because we've hit the right time for that individual to get assistance. But there's also a question of anonymity. There are some people who are a bit embarrassed about seeking assistance, who believe that they should be able to handle all these questions and problems on their own or just with the support of their family and friends. And they're a bit embarrassed about seeking help. Well, the fact that they can be anonymous in their initial interaction with someone really encourages people who have been hesitant, afraid, or embarrassed to get assistance. It lowers the barrier for them to get the help they need. And there's been some amazing research on dealing with prevention of suicide and finding that having the ability to have an anonymous interaction with a healthcare professional, mental health care professional, has actually encouraged people to get help. And then eventually that initial anonymous interaction leads to one where they're actually providing information about their identity and so forth and receive services in a much more traditional way, the way we would in career guidance. Another real benefit of ICT is the fact that it's very easy to locate services and resources. The search capability of the internet in terms of finding people to provide help or finding resources is amazing. You know, we've added a new word in our vocabulary, and we say, well, let's Google that, you know. And there's been a lot of very impressive research done recently about making search engines much more powerful, increasing the chances that you really find the information that you're looking for. And so being able to identify someone to go talk to or to go find resources is much, much more easy and effective today, perhaps, than it has been for times in the past. We also have maximized opportunities for learning. If you think of looking at a flat text file that describes an occupation, the typical job duties, the educational requirements, the type of pay and the job outlook and so forth. We'll compare that with a simulation where on a video basis a person actually assumes the role of someone working in a particular job, and they actually get a chance to experience the work environment. They get a chance to experience some of the types of problems that you may face in working in a particular job. A project manager in a very busy manufacturing company, it's hard to convey the fast pace and the rapid problem solving that sometimes is required in those kind of jobs. But a simulation where the person actually gets a chance to enter that experience, make decisions, and get feedback on the nature of their decisions is a very, very powerful kind of learning resource. Now, there are downsides to every upside, and of course, these types of resources are very expensive to develop. But the potential, the learning potential there, is really significant, and we can improve cost effectiveness in our career interventions, because once I've developed an intervention, especially the web-based intervention, it doesn't make any difference if one person uses it or a million people use it, because I already, my development costs are taken care of. Basically, I have my maintenance costs and the human costs of keeping things up to date, and as well as the human element of providing services. But still, there's significant cost effectiveness gains there. But the other side of the coin are the limitations of these resources. And there's substantial issues associated with the quality of some of the career assessments and career information. In some ways, I think things are worse now. Several years ago, I made the comment that I think now we have improved access to poor quality information and assessments. So the access is improved, but it's access to what? And it costs so little to develop information and put it on the internet in comparison to what it might cost to produce a book. There was a natural barrier where publishers wouldn't really publish a book, take the financial risk to publish a book and warehouse it and ship it and have salespeople try to sell it if they didn't believe the information quality was good. But if I can quickly type up information, create a PDF file, place that on the internet, the information is a lot less expensive to actually present. Now, the research costs in developing the information can be just as they always have been, but actually putting the information where it's available, those costs are less. So that means that lowers the barriers to presenting information. Unfortunately, I think what that means is then that we have, in some cases, poor quality information that's out there. And it concerns me a lot that we have information that potentially is not valid, that people are using to make very high-stakes type of decisions. There are also problems with the implementation of information and communication technology. We've had a long history of poor implementation where we haven't done the type of planning and training and testing and evaluation necessary to make ICT really a success. We know what it takes to make ICT successful, but unfortunately, we often haven't taken the time, we haven't exerted the effort to make sure that we have implemented these systems in ways that they really fully reach their potential. There are some serious problems with confidentiality and security issues on the internet. Almost every week there's a story somewhere where there's been a security breach and personal information has been compromised data has been released that shouldn't have been released. We have lots of resources on the internet, but there are cases where people really need human assistance and there's not much available. Because we haven't always well connected the resources that are available to the practitioner assistance. We haven't integrated those particularly well. So there are people who need help, who access the internet to get the information they need, but they weren't well prepared to really use that information. They have a bad experience. There's no support for them in using that information. And they erroneously conclude that they really can't be helped. They made an attempt, they reached out, they got information, it wasn't helpful, therefore they're just stuck and they're not really going to get better. When in reality, with a little bit of assistance, they might really have benefited from the use of that particular career resource. I think there's also problems of integrating theory, research, and practice in terms of the resources that we have available to us on the internet. Often the resources are not really connected to the theories that we have to guide us in doing our work in designing and delivering career interventions. And so sometimes these resources are available out of context. And so that makes them, I think, harder to really effectively use. And there's another concern, I think, about reduced access for specific populations. The very fact that the internet now is being used by so many individuals, if you walk down the street, the number of people with a smartphone is incredible. That's the fastest growing part of the mobile phone market are smartphones. Access to the internet, amazing capability of these phones. But it's a mistake to assume that everyone has one, because there still is a part of our society that lacks the financial resources to be able to purchase and maintain this type of technology. Tristram Hooley has talked about digital literacy, that it's not just a financial barrier to having access to this technology, but it's also having the knowledge and skills to effectively use this technology. Tony Watts has and Marcus Offer have talked about the fact that the computer resources are available, but people don't necessarily know how to select what's good information and what's not good information. And we need to do a better job of training people the good from the bad. So digital literacy becomes a key variable in people being able to make good use of the ICT that we have available. So we have a mixture of excellent potential, many potential benefits, but also, I think, some significant limitations. Well, let's switch now and look a little bit about some of the roles. What's the role of ICT and what's the role of the practitioner in this? ICT is excellent at performing repetitive information processing and instructional tasks. Computers don't get bored. They can do the same thing over and over and over again with the same level of quality. And actually, human beings are not very good at repetitive tasks. The more repetitive the task, the more a career practitioner is actually likely to do a poor job, because doing the same task over and over and over again by a very intelligent human being means that they tend to get bored. And sometimes when they get bored, they show the fact that they're a bit bored. And it's confusing to the client being served, because the client doesn't understand, is the practitioner bored with the task or are they bored with them? Which then creates problems for the counseling relationship. So in reality, repetitive functions are better handled by the computer than having a human being do those over and over again. Obviously, getting access to information, getting access to assessments ICT excels at providing access. I mentioned learning from virtual online simulations. You can imagine, if you will, simulations of people who are effective and ineffective in job interviews. And we're watching various scenarios where people are behaving in ways that help them to be able to communicate effectively with an interviewer and to be able to present the link between their skills and what the employer is looking for. And being able to look at those examples and judge how one person is successful and one is not, and then actually putting a person in a simulated environment where they see an interviewer asking them questions and they respond and they get feedback. ICT is very good at that kind of structured, repetitive type of learning. Online assessment tools can be particularly helpful both for the individual themselves and practitioners who are providing services and gaining more insight about the nature of their needs and their characteristics. Social networks provide incredible ability to support individuals as they're going through a difficult career decision-making process. I mentioned before unemployment and job clubs. When we have a traditional job club, we have people come and they meet and they support each other as they go through this exploration process, identifying potential employment options and then supporting them, coping with their success and their failure in doing that. We can use social networks and social media to be able to expand that, making that more convenient, more accessible for individuals, as well as provide them with resources for taking action to actually make a decision, an occupational, an educational training, or employment decision. So ICT, again, provides this unparalleled access to resources. But you might say then, well, do we need practitioners any longer? You know, what is the role of the practitioner? Can't we not provide all of this guidance, all of these career interventions? Can we not just do this with the computer? Similar questions have been asked about libraries, where some policy makers have said, perhaps we don't need to continue to provide financial resources to support libraries because all the information is available on the internet. And of course, what we've learned now, having multiple years, couple of decades of experience with the internet, is that people still need assistance in locating and using information. It's not enough for the information just to be available, but it's what's the context for making intelligent and appropriate use of information. How do you find the information that you really need? All of us have had the experience of doing a Google search, and you're overwhelmed with the number of options. And many of us only look maybe to the first two or three pages of search options, when instead there may be some other resource that might be much better suited to our needs. But we really just don't take the effort to really find that particular resource. So we still need people in the mix. Well, what will these people do? What actually would be the role of the practitioner? An important one is assessing readiness. We've learned a lot over the past few years about career interventions, and the effectiveness of career interventions can be dramatically improved, I believe, by making sure that the person is ready for being able to use that resource. And if a person has a low level of readiness, it doesn't mean that using a particular career resource is inappropriate. It just means that they may need more assistance in being able to effectively use that resource. So essentially, I have a differentiated service delivery model where I provide people with more or less assistance depending on their readiness for decision making. Some people, just getting access to the right information is all they need, where other people need much more support in being able to identify the resources that are going to be helpful to them, giving their specific needs. And then they need help in making sense of those resources. There's been a lot of work within some of the more constructivist theories of career intervention and some of the narrative approaches talking about the co-construction of knowledge. And it's through that process sometimes for individuals to really try to make meaning of what is happening to them and what their options are and how to achieve their goals, that the practitioner is a key person in helping them to be able to do that. We just need to identify who needs what type and what level of assistance before we begin providing services. Much like you wouldn't want to go to a physician, say that you're not feeling well, and for them to hand you a prescription and for medicine when they don't really know exactly what your issues are or what the problems are. So we need practitioners to be able to help clarify what really are the needs of the individuals and what resources are going to be most appropriate for them. The process of selecting, assessing, and using these resources are really important. And I've mentioned that really before about which resource is going to be the right resource for them. Assessing whether or not that resource is helpful. Is it really doing the job that that needs being done? And then how to really use some of these resources. Because we have some very sophisticated career interventions that have lots of features. In fact, some of our computer-assisted career guidance systems have extensive resources and features. But exactly what part of a very information and resource-rich system will best relate to a particular need that the individual has? And the practitioner often really is able to help sort and navigate through all of these resources available to pick out which one are particularly needed. Diagnosing client needs also is important. Obviously, what's the specific issue that an individual has? What's the real problem? In many cases, people can formulate that and can express that they have a problem. There's an issue that exists, but they're not exactly sure what the nature of that problem is. Is it a lack of information? Is it really trying to address barriers that they have to making decisions or barriers to employment? There's a motivational process. We've got decades of research on computer-assisted instruction. And there was a big debate 30 years ago. And the debate was, could we replace classroom instruction with computer-assisted instruction? So instead of having a classroom full of students and a teacher presenting a lecture, instead we'll have a classroom full of computer monitors and everyone working individually on their instruction. And what the research has shown very consistently is that traditional lecture and computer-assisted instruction produces about the same results. But it's when you combine the teacher with the computer-assisted instruction, do you get the most gains from the instruction? And so there's still something motivational about having a human being involved in the process of service delivery. It's that encouragement, it's that caring, it's that relationship building that some people really need to be successful in using a resource. We've mentioned social media several times. And that's one of the newest areas, I think, of ICT use in career interventions. But we're really now just at the very beginning stages of trying to figure out what it is that we do in the counselor's, the practitioner's role in social media. To what extent do we monitor young people and adults' use of social media to make sure that the information that's being transmitted is correct? What if client interaction in social media only reinforces stereotypes and prejudices and discrimination? I think practitioners have a role in saying, no, that's not correct, that we need to challenge some of those assumptions. But exactly how the practitioners intervene in that social media space, I think we're at the very beginning stages of really figuring out how that's really going to work well. I mentioned scope of practice having an impact on the use of ICT in career interventions. And the nature of a practitioner's use of ICT a little bit depends on where they work and the kinds of services that are offered currently. So if I work in a very, very large office serving a very large number of clientele, I'm used to having to have very brief interventions. I may be using more self-help interventions. And therefore, that the use of ICT, and especially reaching out at a distance, may be more comfortable for me. If I'm in a very traditional career service where it's strictly an appointment-based half-hour or hour appointment, one person after another when you have your appointment, then the use of ICT is really going to be more limited to information and assessment. So the conceptualization of career services influences the way ICT gets used. So the broader your thinking about the delivery of career services and the role of the practitioner, the broader your use of ICT will be. And obviously, organizational support for ICT is a huge factor. We know from the implementation literature into what extent we use the various options available to us. Well, I want to change gears now, and I want to now talk about some of the actual applications themselves. And so we're going to work through these various common applications, and then hopefully we'll have a little bit of time for a question or two. I've already mentioned computer-assisted career guidance systems. These were kind of the early pioneers in the use of technology in career interventions. They all kind of share some common core features of providing career assessments, search for options, and delivering information. But we've added on to those a host of other really potentially useful applications. Online chat with a career practitioner, I'll have more to say about that in a few minutes. Career portfolios to help people demonstrate their skills and to be able to express to potential employers and educators more what their potential may be. Adding videos, digital publications, on various career topics, local links to local job banks. The list goes on of additional features. And we've got lots of research evidence that shows that these systems produce effective and positive outcomes. Although having the right counseling intervention for people who need that increases the effectiveness of these type of systems. Computer-assisted assessment, I've mentioned before. And this is where I'm integrating taking a test, scoring a test, and providing interpretation in a seamless way actually encourages the client, the individual, to be more actively engaged. It reduces scoring errors and makes provides immediate results instead of having wait for something to be scored. I have some examples here of common resources that have been well-researched and well-used, as well as some new innovative approaches to assessment, virtual card sorts, YouTube assessments, and so forth, that we're now beginning to use. One of the most powerful but probably least used parts of this computer-assisted assessment is computer-based test interpretation, because then I'm going to integrate theory, research, and expert opinion to provide a more powerful interpretation of the assessment results. And CBTI is best used as a consultant role, not to automate the interpretation of test results, but instead to provide an extra expert opinion to the practitioner and the client about what's the real meaning of these test results. The problem is that we haven't really developed computer-based test interpretation as much as we could, and it's because of some of the development costs and not having the funds to be able to invest in that. Computer-assisted career information, obviously there's lots of enormous amounts of information available, but occupational information, educational information, training information, and employment information. But again, it's like drinking water from the fire hose. So there's a massive amount of information available, but are we really sure that the information is current? Unfortunately, on many websites, it's hard to tell when that information was posted on the website. Is that information still current? Is it still valid? And also the whole issue of bias about information. Who is it that's behind the creation of the information? Who paid for the collection of that information? What potential agenda do they have? How are they trying to influence the public? What message are they trying to get across? There's a couple of examples from American practice. I have to have a disclaimer that obviously I'm most familiar with American resources, and so those have been many cases the examples that I've used. But there are many resources from many countries, very high quality resources that are available, and I think you just have to look from your own country perspective and language basis to be able to identify those. Although there are resources on the internet to help identify quality resources, and lots of links through organizations like ELGPN to provide that kind of information. Here's some additional information sources and things, and you'll have obviously all these links are working, and you can follow these through to take a look at these. Special populations. One of the things I'm most pleased with is that we've begun to address needs of individuals with special needs. And I think we've begun to do that much better now than we have maybe in the past. And here, I've got examples here, persons with disabilities, veterans, offenders, and so forth. And so we now have, I think, a little bit more information for individuals with unique needs. Distance career counseling, which is not necessarily high tech, because a telephone is a very, very powerful tool, as we found with LearnDirect in the UK, for reaching out and providing quality and effective counseling support, guidance support for people with career questions. But it involves the provision of brief or longer-term individual counseling to clients via the telephone or the web that's often augmented by the use of career assessments and information available on the internet. And again, this is this reaching out at a time when people are available that extends our reach to serve populations that perhaps we haven't served as well before. Initial evidence shows that it's popular and that it works well. Social media, you've heard me mention social media several times, but we've got Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram. We've got smartphone apps now evolving about decision making, online career games, the real game being the most known worldwide. Really to engage people in making career decisions and getting the information they need. I want to take a moment, though, since we're mentioning social media, to talk a little bit about some research that Jana, who provided such a nice introduction, and Raimo and I have been working on for a couple of years now. But essentially, what we've done is to really through focus groups with practitioners, trying to really understand how people are really using social media. What's the way that they are approaching this? And I realize the slide is very difficult to read, but we have a reference at the bottom there, and at the end of this presentation, there's a reference with a link actually to this piece of research where you can get the information. And it's much easier to read. But people, what we're finding is that people have very differing ways of using social media. For some people, they're using it much the way we used the IT initially in back in the 70s and 80s, where it was really a tool for delivering information, where other people see it really as a way of reaching out to people who haven't been served. Other people are looking at more collaborative models, which is where I think some of the constructivist and narrative thinking comes into play here for connecting with clients, and all the way to really using social media as a tool for transforming guidance and for pushing us forward and trying to look at new ways of reaching people, about changing the role of the counselor to where we're actually interacting and living in this social media space and helping to take advantage of it and empowering people to make good use of social media. And I think these are all additive roles. I think their social media can be used effectively in all different types of ways, and we're at this very beginning stage of really understanding how to make best use of this this resource. Virtual career centers, where we really provide much of what we would find in a traditional career center, with web-based resources and links, with practitioner support available, with people on the phone or chat or actual video conferencing, where people can use resources and receive assistance. And of course, obviously, this really breaks down the barriers that we've had in terms of access caused by space. Virtually, we don't have to worry about the amount of room to have information, because now we have almost infinite amount of space that we can really store the information. So we can take the best of what we've learned about how to create effective career centers and build those virtually. That's not to say that face-to-face counseling is not still needed. I think we're going to have a role for face-to-face counseling for a very, very, very long time. It's just the face-to-face, in one case, is in real time, where I'm in the room with a person, but the rest of the time, the face-to-face, I think, is going to be through technology and use of these virtual centers. I think probably the greatest power of the use of ICT is this integration of the technology and the human. And I really like to talk about the teachable moment. If we have a supply-driven model that we're working from, where people come to me as the practitioner and I supply them what they need, but we're constrained by my availability and my appointments that I have, think of it of turning it around to more of a demand approach, where I'm on the internet and I'm using a career resource and I'm learning about various options, but it's causing me to think of questions that I really can't answer, and the information doesn't answer. To be able to immediately reach out to a career professional, a practitioner, at that moment, and to talk to someone, and to be able to share what I'm learning through the internet, actually sharing my computer screen with this individual to be able to, so we both see the same thing, provides the intervention within that teachable moment. To where it's the right time, I'm thinking about it. I don't have to wait till next Tuesday at 3 o'clock when I have an appointment that I may or may not remember to go to. I think this is where we're going to see the most powerful use of these resources. And I think LearnDirect is just an excellent example of that. There are a host of ethical issues that I think that we really have to deal with. Concerns. Julia Macklin and I have just have an article with the IAVG Journal on this. IAVG is one of our sponsors for this webinar today, and there's some. I think we raised some key and troubling concerns about this. Confidentiality and privacy. We've seen violations of privacy. Professional boundaries, practitioners working across languages and national boundaries and cultural boundaries, the issues associated with that, working in different geographic locations where I may not fully understand what's happening locally, the quality of resources, poor quality information, biased information, stereotyping, invalid assessments. I think these are all significant concerns. I think the fact that some people are using resources they're not ready to use, and I think creating a failure experience bothers me. And I think there are some digital literacy and social equity issues associated with people that that don't make good use or don't have access to the technology that I think we need to work towards improving our professional standards, which we have example of some American standards here that we've created as we're beginning to try to address these. We're working hard to try to understand these issues and to know how to go about proactively limiting their potential negative impact. But still, I think we need to do more. I think in America we have a lot to learn from what's happening in other countries. And I think if we share our information, maybe we can address some of these concerns more appropriately. So the conclusion is that the challenge, I think, to us as a profession is to decide how to fully and best use all this ICT that we now have available to us. Things are changing rapidly, new innovations. How do we use Google Glass to help us with innovations? That might be a wonderful resource in terms of simulations, but we have to think through how are we going to use these resources. We have the opportunity to create new practices and paradigms to better reach individuals who need assistance with career exploration and decision making. We can reach people that we've never really been able to reach before. And I think the possibilities are really amazing. I think we just have to work smart and be thoughtful and use these resources in a way that really help us to meet the mission that we have, that we've had for a long time. So I want to allow a few minutes for a question or two. Jana, I will leave that to you.
Thank you, Jim. I'm following the chat and just got the comment from Auli that she mentioned that the issues that you talk, there's a lot of what we are similar issues that we are talking here in Finland. Mm-hmm. So, and to the audience, if you have any questions, please, you can just use the chat and I can pass a couple of them. We have a little time for Jim to answer. I'd like to ask one question from you, Jim. Since you started working with this topic already in the mid-70s, which is nearly 40 years ago, I'd be interested to hear your views on what has changed and what remains the same.
I've thought a lot about that because in many ways the technology has changed dramatically from the technology that we had in those days. The opportunities for the co-construction of knowledge, the fact the changing role of the practitioner, I think is a major shift. I think the main shift points that I see from the original automation of existing functions was when we added the communication element, where you actually could use technology to reach out to people and to communicate both directly to a client or amongst a group of clients, I think was the first major shift. But the second major shift was really what we're just seeing now, which is this co-construction of knowledge where it further evolves the role of this practitioner. And I think while on one hand that's scary, the other hand I think we need to embrace the possibilities, experiment and see how we can make best use of this. But I'd have to say I'm frustrated by the fact that some of the problems that we clearly identified in the 70s as being issues, we have not fixed. Things like the validity of information, things like the validity of assessments, the poor quality of the implementation sometimes. We buy technology that we don't implement well. We don't evaluate what we do. We don't improve what we do. There's no effort in some settings to try to really understand how to get the most out of the technology. We knew that back in the 70s, and I think those are things we're still struggling with. We knew early on in the 70s that there were a gap with some people in our society having access to these resources and other people not. And although that gap is narrowed, there's a lot more people with access to technology now. It's still not everyone. And I think as long as we have any group in our society that either because of financial access or digital literacy that doesn't have access to these resources, we need to find some way of making sure that they're not marginalized, that they're not left out of this process. So I'm excited, On one hand, pleased and still frustrated. There are things that we still have yet to really address.
We have a couple more questions on internet. I'll ask. Annette is asking, have you done any research on which counseling approaches are more appropriate online than others?
That's a very good question. We essentially know that we can communicate well in terms of using the internet. It is possible to develop a relationship at a distance. We know that part works. We know that there are some theories, because of the way they're structured, they're more amenable to programming and information. One example would be the Holland's theory, the RISEC theory, because of the fact that we've got lots of research data, we've got lots of descriptions that already existed. It was very amenable to bring that theory to the internet. But we've also had some positive experiences with some more constructivist approaches. Heidi Villema, I think, has done some really interesting work in that regard from the theoretical perspective that she's working from. But in terms of a head-to-head comparison of theoretical approaches with a control group, no. You know, we haven't done that. And we need to get more people excited about the technology and career interventions to get people to do the research and to get the funding to be able to do it. And so hopefully we can get people excited enough to where they're asking good questions like that.
And we got greetings from Sunny Bucharest. And
yes.
They thank you for your interesting presentation. And just what you were a little bit coming on, the question is, could you open up a bit more about the counselor's role on constructivist approach?
When we talk about the co-construction of knowledge, I think it is, if we have people who are working at a distance, then one of the things I think we're going to have to sort out is to what extent is the co-construction a dialogue or discourse between the individuals in that moment, and then the client goes out independently for the use of resources. And one of the things I'd like to see some experimentation with is that discourse is informed in real time by actually reaching out in the internet and being able to access the resources in that particular moment. I think that's a potential for some of the constructivist approaches that I certainly would like to see some experimentation with.
Thank you. I will now use the opportunity to conclude the session. As we heard today, the use of technology, it is an ongoing an increasingly important issue across the career sector, and I think there is still a space for us to expand our understanding of the technology and the role in career services. Once more, thank you, Jim, and thank you for the international audience. Thank you for your very good questions and comments, and we wish you all success and look forward to future collaboration. The materials on this session and the recording of the video is available on our website, evokes.fi, and also on FSU website.
Yes.
Well, once again, thank you to all of you, and thank you very much, Jim. This was very interesting.
Thank you.